Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yasya Navaja Charitam Manisina.
Yasya Navaja Charitam Manisina.
Grinante Avidya Patalam Vivitsavaha.
Grinante Avidya Patalam Vivitsavaha.
Nirasta Samyati Sayopi Yat Swayam.
Nirasta Samyati Sayopi Yat Swayam.
Vichasa Charyam Acharat Kati Satam.
Vichasa Charyam Acharat Kati Satam.
Yasyana Vajya Charitam Manisino.
Yasyana Vajya Charitam Manisino.
Grinanti Avijya Patalam Vivitsava.
Grinanti Avijya Patalam Vivitsava.
Since the verse was already discussed yesterday, I'll just read the translation. Although no one in the material world is equal to or greater than Lord Shiva, although his unimpeachable character is followed by great souls to dismantle the mass of nescience, he nevertheless remains as if a devil to give salvation to all the devotees of the Lord. So I don't know what comments you have heard yesterday about this devilish nature of Lord Shiva, but since Lord Shiva is giving shelter to such kind of beings, of ghostly beings and so on, since Rudra, in his form as Rudra, he is involved in the destruction of the universe. However, that is only a very small aspect of Lord Shiva. And today we'll try and discuss a little more in a more complete way the nature of Lord Shiva. So we read the next steps. Chapter 14, verse 28.
Asanti yasya charinam hidurbhaga swarmam ratasya vidusa samitam yarvasprabhaya varnam lepanai swarojanam svatmatayo palaritam.
Unfortunate foolish persons, not knowing that he's engaged in his own self, laugh at him. Such foolish persons engage in maintaining the body, which is eatable by dogs, which dresses ornaments, garments, and items. Lord Shiva never accepts any luxurious dress, garment, ornament. But those who are addicted to the decoration of the body, which is finely eatable by dogs, very luxuriously maintain it as the self. Such persons do not understand Lord Shiva, but they approach him for luxurious material comforts. There are two kinds of devotees of Lord Shiva. One class is the gross materialist seeking only bodily comforts from Lord Shiva, and the other class desires to become one with him. They are mostly impersonalists and prefer to chant Shiva Ham, I am Shiva, or after liberation I shall become one with Lord Shiva. In other words, the karmis and the gyanis are genuine devotees of Lord Shiva, but they do not properly understand his real purpose in life. Sometimes so-called devotees of Lord Shiva imitate him using poisonous intoxicants. Lord Shiva once swallowed an ocean of poison and thus his throat became blue. The imitation Shivas try to follow him by indulging in poisons and thus they're ruined. The real purpose of Lord Shiva is to serve the soul, Lord Krishna. He desires that all luxurious articles such as nice garments, ornaments and cosmetics be given to Lord Krishna only, because Krishna is the real enjoyer. He refuses to accept such luxurious items himself because they're only meant for Krishna. However, since they do not know this purpose of Lord Shiva, foolish persons either laugh at him or profitlessly try to imitate him. So first let us for a moment discuss the nature of Shiva Tattva or Shambhu Tattva. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, in the Paramatma Sandarbha, and in the Brahma Samhita, it is very clearly established how Vishnu Tattva really works, although it may not always be commonly understood in that way. But basically what is explained is this, is that the material world and the spiritual world are separated by the causal ocean, also known as the Viraja River. Devgam, Haridam, and the Viraja River is the border in between. Then it says that on either side of the Viraja River is an abode of Lord Shiva. On the spiritual side of the Viraja River is the abode of Sada Shiva. On the material side is the abode of the demigod Shiva, who is residing in Kailash. In the Briya Bhagavatamrita, the abode on the spiritual side, the abode of Sada Shiva, is described as Shiva Loka. Jiva Goswami also clearly states in Paramahamsa Sandarbha that we should not think that the demigod Shiva is the same as the Shiva who resides in Shiva Loka. So there are two Shivas, and basically, because we understand from the Brahma Samhita what takes place. In the Brahma Samhita, it is basically said that there is a day of Brahman. Well, it's implied. There is a day of Brahman and a night of Brahman. This is not stated yet, this is the introduction. And during the night of Brahman, the material energy is not manifest. At that stage, the material energy is only available in potential. The potential of the material energy is known as pradana. It said in pradana, the three modes of material nature are in equilibrium, and therefore they dissolve each other, and they are not manifest, the three modes of material nature, at that time. So, it is then in the Upanishad literature, it is said sa'aiksata. Sa'aiksata means that the Lord glanced upon the pradana, upon the potential of the material energy. That Lord who glanced was Lord Mahavishnu. Then it is said that Shambhu becomes the glance. Lord Shiva becomes the glance. And that glance is touching pradana. And pradana then becomes activated, and the mahatattva with all the material elements becomes manifest, and at the same time, in that glance, the living beings are impregnated into the material energy. It is said that Lord Sada Shiva is, even when he is residing in the spiritual world, on the spiritual side of the Viraja River, still he is always in the mood of a devotee. There, in his eternal abode, he is not acting as the worshipable deity. Rather, he is acting as the worshipable, as the worshipper. It is that mood of a servant that is predominant in him. It is the dasa abhiman that is very strong within him. And Lord Sada Shiva is always worshipping Lord Sankarshan. So, that is the Sankarshan in the second Chaturvyuha. We know that there is Lord Krishna, Balaram, from Balaram comes Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pajuna, Aniruddha, then comes Lord Narayan, then comes a second Chaturvyuha, again Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pajuna, Aniruddha. So the second Sankarshan is the worshipable deity of Lord Sada Shiva. And Sankarshan is sometimes described in the scriptures as Jiva. Not to think that he is a Jiva, but it is explained in the Sandarbhas by Jiva Goswami that Sankarsan is known as Jiva because he is the origin of all the Jivas. So he's Jiva with the capital letters. He's not a living being, he's the Supreme Lord. One of the expansions of the Lord in Vishnu Tattva. But he is the origin of all Jivas. So then, as Lord Mahavishnu gets involved with the material creation, in the same way Sada Shiva gets involved, when Sada Shiva, as the glands, touches the pradhana, he comes in contact with the material energy. And it said, then yatadati vikara visesa yogat, Brahma Samhita, then the transformation, the vikara takes place, by which Lord Sada Shiva becomes the demigod Shiva. Jiva Goswami describes it as like a lamp, and the glass of the lamp becomes dirty. Right? It becomes dirty by the smoke, and then it becomes black, and then the natural light that is there can no longer manifest. So in that way, Lord Shiva as a demigod Shiva is not manifesting the same full potency as Sada Shiva. Okay. That is basically Shiva Tattva. So in Sada Shiva is a complete devotee of the Lord, completely. And also Lord the demigod Shiva, who is residing in this world, is also acting within the plan of the Lord, but sometimes it appears that he's acting contrary to the Lord when he supports demons or even fights with the Lord. But that is the demigod Shiva. Over a whole, Lord Shiva is undoubtedly the greatest devotee. Then, Advaita Acharya. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Advaita Acharya is identified as Lord Shiva. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Ayurveda chapter 6, Advaita Acharya is identified as Lord Mahavishnu. There is no distinction because Sada Shiva is a direct expansion of Mahavishnu, an immediate expansion of Mahavishnu. There are some descriptions about this in a book called the Advaita Prakash. Unfortunately, the Advaita Prakash is a book that was rejected by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, so whatever we got from there is just now edited out. But Sada Shiva is an expansion of Lord Mahavishnu. And as such, there is no difference. Advaita Acharya is Lord Shiva and he's also Mahavishnu. He's both. There's no contradiction at all. Now, Advaita Acharya, his main mood is Ami Chaitanya Dasar Muni. I am the servant of Lord Chaitanya. He has this Dasa Abhimana. He has this mood of service throughout. And then Advaita Acharya is when Lord Shiva is actually, Lord Sada Shiva then is active in the material world. He is actually not only involved with planting the jivas in the material world where they exist for a long time to try and express their material desires, anani bhagya mukha, where the living beings are almost nature body, but it is Advaita Acharya who is himself there as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, or Sada Shiva, who is Vishnu Tattva. That's the interesting part. So Sada Shiva is Vishnu Tattva, and only as the demigod Shiva does he become a separate Tattva, separate from Lord Vishnu. So then Advaita Acharya is in the material world and trying to make arrangements to deliver the conditioned souls. And we see that Advaita Acharya, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of the Shaligram Shila, so that the Supreme Personality of Godhead may appear in this world. So God is worshipping God so that God may appear to this world. It gets a little bit, complicated. One might ask the question, why is worshipping God so that God can appear in this world? If he has already appeared in the world, why doesn't he just say, I am it? Right? I mean, it seems to make sense. But the point is that he is the avatar. He is the avatar of the Lord. And the avatar of the Lord is an expansion of the Lord. And who is within Vishnu Tattva, but the expansions of the Lord, they can only establish the principles of religion and annihilate demons. Okay. But Krishna, the Adi Purush, the original Supreme Personality of God, he can give Krishna brain. So therefore, Advaita Acharya didn't want to do that. He didn't want to establish principles of religion and do the work of an avatar. He wanted the Supreme Lord to appear to give Krishna brain, because Advaita Acharya wanted everyone to have Krishna brain. Therefore, he worshipped the Supreme Lord, or call it worship, but I wouldn't actually really call it worship, because once Advaita Acharya read in a particular scripture that the Lord said, if you offer me simply a leaf and some water, that of course indicates Ganga Jal and Tulsi leaf, but if you offer me some leaf and some water, that's what he said, then I become so indebted, I have nothing in my possession to give in exchange. Therefore, all I can do in exchange is to offer myself. When Advaita Acharya read this, then he suddenly realized, this is the solution, this is it. I will force him to appear. I will worship with Tulsi. I will worship with Ganga Jal, Shaligram Shila, and he'll be forced to appear. Therefore, some call it worship, others call it a conspiracy. It was simply he was trying to force the Lord to appear into this world. And as such, Advaita Acharya's worship continued. And Lord Chaitanya appeared in this world. Advaita Acharya, meanwhile, was establishing principles of religion. Advaita Acharya was much older than Lord Chaitanya, as much as 53 years older. So he was present for a long time and preaching for a long time. So in Shantipur, every day he would give lectures on the Bhagavad Gita. And in particular, his aim was to present the Gita Satchira Pant. Or the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Srila Prabhupada took that phrase, Bhagavad Gita as it is, from this Gita Satya Path, from the Chaitanya Bhagavat. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat it is said, from the Gita, the true path has to be followed. So this is translated as Bhagavad Gita as it is. And so he tried to give the Bhagavad Gita as it is. But in the 13th chapter, there was a particular verse which was giving him big problems. He couldn't figure it out, because it is said that the Lord, there it is said that the Lord has many hands, and it also says he has no hands, he has many hands. So what to do with this verse? He couldn't figure it out. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to appear in his dreams and used to instruct him in his dreams as to how to understand the Gita. And on this verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just pointed out, it's Paramatma. It's Paramatma. It's not the impersonal Brahman, it's Paramatma who appears in the hearts of many and therefore has many faces, many arms. It's not the universal form, it is Paramatma that you're looking at. So it's not impersonalism. So we can see that the commentary of Bhadeva Vijabhusan includes this point. It is interesting. It is stated that at the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And his brother-in-law was Gopinath Acharya. Gopinath Acharya was the devotee and Sarvabhauma was the scholar. And these two, they were always in disagreement with one another. But eventually, And Gopinathacharya had arguments from scripture with Sarvabhauma at such broad learning. Right? It says that Gopinath was always had arguments to establish the devotional conclusions and even to defeat Sarvabhauma, but Sarvabhauma wouldn't accept it. But eventually he did become a devotee. Then it is said by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur that later Gopinathacharya came back. He came back and he became Baladevi Jibusa. And then he was a scholar. Right. At that time, he was a great scholar. So anyway, Baladevi Jibusa is the inspiration for the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Srila Prabhupada has taken the commentary of Baladevi Jibusa as the foundation of his explanation of the Gita. So, the mood of Advaita Acharya was this Dasa Abhiman. Although he was the Supreme Lord, he's completely in the mood of being the servant of Lord Chaitanya. And that is really the case with Lord Shiva. It is said, although Sadashiva is Lord Vishnu, it is said that his devotee side is much more important and much more manifest than his Vishnu side. He's not showing his Vishnu side very much, Lord Sarasvati. He's showing his devotee side. He's showing his side of being the servant. And as a servant, he's very careful with the material energy. Very careful. Of course, Lord Shiva is a grihastha. He has a consort in the form of Parvati. It is mentioned that once Parvati was pointing out that, well, we are grihasthas, we are, but we don't have a griha, right? We don't have a house. So this is not right, for grihasthas are supposed to have a house. So then Lord Shiva finally agreed and he arranged to construct a very nice house, very first class and beautiful, decorated with jewels, gold, and all kinds of opulences he arranged for it. It was done, a wonderful house, but then, in order, before they could move into the house, they needed to have a Griha Pravesh ceremony, an entrance ceremony where all the inauspiciousness of the house was removed so that they could move in. So they got a Brahmana to perform that, it might have been Brahman himself who did it. And anyway, then the thing was, they had to give some dakshin after that. But then Lord Shiva, what did he have? He had nothing. The only thing he had was that house. So then he decided to give the house in dakshin. And that settled that, right? So then again, all there was a tree, a banyan tree, as a residence, and that remains the residence of Lord Shiva, who is not getting involved with the material energy. Because why would the servant of the Lord get involved with the material energy? As little as possible. Only for the service of the Lord. Why, for oneself, would one get involved with the material energy, which is very treacherous and tricky, and can so easily capture us? One might say, yes, but we can use many things for Krishna, maybe. Right? So we should, but it is tricky. It is very tricky because in the process we may also get caught. Yukta Vairagya, this philosophy of Yukta Vairagya has been alive in our movement for a long time. Rupa Goswami is the origin of it, but then the six Goswamis, they showed a lifestyle of great renunciation, very simple. Sleeping under a different tree every night, wearing just... Sanatana Goswami accepted an old cloth, an old dhoti, which he ripped in four pieces, and then he had like two sets of cloth, one the short loin cloth, another a little chador, and two sets like that. So there's one quarter of a dhoti. So he made two sets out of that very simple old cloth. What can be said? Samkirpur, They were very wealthy, but they gave up all that wealth and they were living very renounced and simple. But then we see Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he changes things. He comes up, he emphasizes the yukta, right? Not the vairagya. We see the Goswamis are emphasizing a lot of vairagya. But then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta starts to emphasize the yukta, and he suddenly starts to wear sewn cloth and overcoat, he drives in a car. And he's criticized. When he comes in Vrindavan, some Babaji's are criticizing him, saying, is he a follower of the Goswamis? Not to his face, but in the back, but just loud enough so that he can hear, but not see who said it. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta turned around and snapped and said, yes, a follower of the Goswamis, not one who cheaply imitates the Goswamis, but one who actually takes the mission of the Goswamis. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is an interesting person because he creates the bridge between tradition and modernity, modern times. And suddenly, he transfers Krishna consciousness from the traditional era and its traditional form to the modern times. Because we can no longer live like traditional people. In my years in India, I used to often do programs in the IIT, which is the most prestigious university in India. It is the Indian Institute for Technology. And, you know, if any, all the students there... All the students there are, about 80% of them are going to America and get paid like a few hundred dollars per hour. And so
if you get paid a few hundred dollars per hour, then you can also become a little arrogant.
It's natural. But I was regularly visiting the campus, and many of these students, they all came from a village, and they had a big dilemma. Right? Is it like, how can we hold on to the tradition of our village? It's very nice, but how can we hold on to it? We live in this modern age. And then, of course, yukta vairagya, computer, anything, any evil thing can be engaged in the service of the Lord. A car, the evil machines, the products of the Ugra Karma world are used now in the service of Krishna. Prabhupada in Bhagavatam calls the factories, he calls them the dungeons of the demons. So in these dungeons of the demons, he said, Ugra Karma products are being produced there. Horrible, horrible works that are meant to destroy the world. Well, that's what we see. So many things coming out. And then we engage these things in the service of Krishna. The computer, the car, and so on. And in a sense, we use it for auspicious purposes. We use the car as a sankirtan vehicle. But it remains a murderous machine. It remains a destroyer, and it's an aggressive machine. And I've experienced myself that in driving, that after 1 hour of driving, I change. The car changes me. I am normally quite peaceful. I try not to harm a fly. But when I'm driving for 1 hour, then I become part of the machine. And if some idiot, if some idiot comes in front of my wheels, I want a button on my dashboard with a flamethrower. Burn it to ashes,
Idiot,
You regularly see these people, you cut it a little with the car and they overtake you and show you your finger. I mean, that's a common thing.
thing on the road, you know. So what to do? What to do about this? Somehow or another, this machine changes our consciousness. Is it interesting? The nature of Yukta Vairagya. So we can see that although we engage it in the service of Krishna, that there's still an element of its contaminated features there. So one must be extremely careful with this Yukta Vairagya. It's one, yes, purely for the service of Krishna, and then, okay. And then again go back to the model of Lord Shiva. So, of course, our current day society is a little different than the time of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was sitting in Mayapur and he was performing great vows of austerity, chanting 300,000 names a day and just living in a very simple hut and eating very simple basic things, completely in the spirit of the Goswami renunciation. But then he went across the bridge from tradition to modernity, and then he preached in the modern world. And then Krishna consciousness spread in the modern world. Now we were born in the modern world, we came in the modern world, we've only known Krishna consciousness in the modern world. The cushions are so hard. It's not easy. It's not easy, I tell you, you know. It's not easy at all. So austere. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam about those men who dress up like sannyasis. Yeah? I mean, not like the sannyasis from yonder who went into the forest, into the jungle, in order to become, to develop fearlessness, abhaya samsudhir, jnana yoga vedistitaha, is the duty of the sannyasi who should develop fearlessness. That is the duty of the sannyasi. He should be fearless. Now, just see. Anyway, so the yukta vairagya, the vairagya is a little less. And it may be, maybe it could be advantageous for us if sometimes we can go on a pilgrimage and if we can go across the bridge back to tradition. Or if we can even bring some elements of tradition, of traditional Vaishnava renunciation into our life. Just because a Vaishnava is fearless, but he has one fear. One fear he has. He fears the material energy. See, the Prabhupada often said, the problem with you, to his disciples, is that you are not sufficiently afraid of Maya. A Vaishnava is always afraid of the illusory energy, never underestimating the power of Maya and appreciating that Maya is very powerful. So even a fearless Vaishnava is careful of Maya. Of course, we see Prahlad Maharaj who prays and basically states that I'm not at all afraid of the material energy because I have your shelter. So yes, with the shelter of the Lord, Daiviyesa Gunami Mahamaya Duratiya Ameriye Kapalante Mayamitantarantite. Then one can be delivered from this fear of Maya and this influence of Maya. But otherwise, we are careful. So, renunciation is that, you know, like is simply based on that idea that let's be careful with the material energy. That's the idea. It's not about creating some sort of punishment, you know, for ourselves to overcome the tendency to sense gratification. Let us just conquer this low desire for enjoying the material energy into ourselves and deny ourselves pleasure. That is not Vaishnava renunciation. That is the renunciation of the impersonalness. The impersonalist is engaging in such type of renunciation, of denial, to harden himself so that he will no longer to be able to conquer the mind and senses. Before I joined Krishna consciousness, I somehow or other became and visited a Buddhist monastery, and it was in an old tower with water around it, and they had a bridge, and you could pull up the bridge, and they would let guests in the evening, and then they would pull up the bridge, and only the next morning at 10 they would let it down. Anyway, I thought, I'll take the risk because I have swimming diplomas, so if it gets serious, I'll just go. Anyway, okay, getting up at 4 o'clock, no problem. Then there were some prayers, Tibetan prayers, with a translation, and it was being recited, and a translation was read, no problem. A little bit of meditation, all right, sitting in a lotus position, a bit of a problem for my legs, but in principle, no problem. Then a little pranayama, breathing through one nostril, breathing through another nostril. I could tolerate it. It was all right. So the whole morning program they had, they had a speaker who gave a lecture, even that, sat through it. Then it was breakfast. And at breakfast, they served one small piece of bread, seriously, no bigger than what I'm indicating with my fingers right now, with a little miso on top. Now, miso is soybean paste, and in my books, miso is short for miserable. It's just that was breakfast, and I personally like breakfast. And I looked at it, and I just thought, is this breakfast? I thought, I don't think that spiritual life can be like this, That it is a process of self-denial. And that it is a process where we have to deny ourselves the natural things. No, I think it has to be more natural. I was the first one waiting in front of the bridge at 9:45. I was standing there. And then someone came to me and said, oh, you want to go? Why do you want to go? I didn't tell them it was the breakfast. But I know I can tell the devotees because, a Hare Krishna breakfast. And you will all understand. So anyway, that point is there. But that sort of... But it wasn't just shallow, that it was about the tongue. I could just see a process of negation is not the right process. That's not the right process. So this type of renunciation is the wrong type of renunciation. But being afraid of the material energy and considering that we are weak and therefore being careful with the material energy is the renunciation of the Vaishnava, who is eager to use anything in the service of Krishna, but in his private life likes to keep things simple. So keep it simple. Why would I unnecessarily get entangled? And that is a good principle. Of course, when you are Sudama the Brahmana, and what can you do? He started out poor and his wife asked him to go to Krishna and gave him this old dry chip rice which he was hiding from Krishna. But anyway, Krishna sort of snatched it out of his fingers, took it by, and he got his reward. And he got the reward, although he forgot to ask for it. But when he came home, the whole region had changed. Where once his hut used to be, now there was this huge palace. And then this lady in royal dress, surrounded by many servants, came his direction, smiling, and was so happy. And he sort of like, who is this lady? And it took him like a while before he realized, my God, it's my wife. She has changed a bit from what she looked like when I left. And then he was received, and then he also lived in royalty. But it didn't affect him because his love for Krishna was too deep. But when our love for Krishna is not so deep, then we must be careful and live in simple conditions and follow in the footsteps of Lord Shiva and develop this dasa abhiman, this mood of being a servant. And not being a master, not being an enjoyer. I need this, I want this, I'm controlling this. No, dasa abhiman. Just dasa abhiman. I am the servant. And therefore, I just need a humble place to rest, a humble meal. I just need some humble service. And in this way, Lord Shiva is Vaishnavya Yathashambhu. By this dasa abhiman, by this great mood of humility and simplicity, which consistently he is displaying. So any questions or problems?
Is it that Sadashiva becomes glance and falls on Pradhana? Is he this glance of
Mahavishnu?
So, this glance, what Mahavishnu is doing, is it called as Sadashiva or?
Is it what?
Sadashiva.
Is it called Sadashiva?
Yeah.
No.
Or is it the glance of Mahavishnu?
Just listen. Niyati Sarama Devi Tat Priya Tat Vasam Tada Tarlingam Bhagavan Shambhu Jyoti Rupa Sanatana Yayoni Sapara Shakti. Now, the English is a little high. The secondary process of association with Maya is described. Ramadevi, the spiritual chit potency, beloved consort of the Supreme Lord, is the regulatrix of all living entities. The divine plenary portion of Krishna creates the mundane world. At creation, there appears a divine halo of the nature of his own subjective portion, Swamsa. This halo is divine Shambhu, the masculine symbol or manifested emblem of the Supreme Lord. This halo is the dim twilight reflection of the Supreme Eternal Effulgence. This masculine symbol is the subjective portion of divinity who functions as progenitor of the material world, subject to the Supreme Regulatrix, Niyati. The conceiving potency in regard to the mundane creation makes her appearance out of the supreme regulatrix. So from Ramadevi, the Prakriti is then manifest. She is Maya, the limited, non-absolute, apara potency, the symbol of mundane feminine productivity. The intercourse of these two brings forth the faculty of perverted cognition, the reflection of the seed of the procreative desire of the Supreme Lord. So it is from Mahavishnu, who is glancing, it is Sadashiva, who is that glance. And then Ramadevi, who is the chit potency, the pleasure potency in the spiritual world, becomes Maya. And who's in potential there in Pradhana, when the glance hits the Pradhana, Pradhana becomes activated, becomes Mahatattva, Maya becomes manifested, and the living beings are impregnated in the material world.
Yeah. And this happens every night of Brahma, or it happens only when the...
This happens every day of Brahma, right? It is at the beginning of the day, the creation. At the end of the night of Brahma, at the beginning of the day, this happens.
And what is the difference between this creation and the creation of the universe's beginning?
There is a simultaneous manifestation, right, where as the Pradhana is being activated, then the universes begin to come from the pore holes of Mahavishnu. So it happens simultaneously. So these two descriptions of the creation are there, and they happen simultaneously.
And this Sadashiva, who is in spiritual abode, what about this Rudra's concept, which is coming from the eyes of...
The Rudra concept is the expansions of the demigod Shiva. So once Sada Shiva comes in contact with Pradhana, then he transforms, and then he takes
not only becomes the demigod Shiva, but he manifests himself in the form of 11 different rudras in the material world, who are entering into so many ways in the destructive flow.
One last question. For grihasthas.
For grihasthas.
How to understand this Yukta Vairagya?
How to understand Yukta Vairagya? It's the same. The grihasthas also, you know, household life is sometimes described as the andakupa, the deep dark well, right, in the Bhagavatam. So one can, when one gets married, one can just go to the well, dive in with his head down, you know, and try to get to the bottom of the well. You know? But usually, wells also have a ladder. Right, on the side, you know, steps that go in for maintenance work. So, you can go in the well, but you don't have to go to the bottom. It's not necessary that you go all the way to the bottom. For the Grihamedis, they go to the bottom. But the Grihasthas, the Vaishnavas, when they enter into the Grihastha ashram, they are careful to maintain high spiritual standards of purity. And they're careful not to step over the line of dharma, and especially when it comes to sexual activities. Dharma Guru Bhuti Sukhamas Nibharatara Sabah, they are following sexual activities according to religious principles, which are further defined in the Manu Samhita, where it is stated that sexual intercourse may be engaged in between the 6th and the 16th day of the female's monthly cycle, then in this way, yeah, the Garbhadana Sanskara is described. So when Garbhadana Sanskara is being observed, then sexuality is free from any darkness, free from any guilt, or free from any contamination. When Garbhadana Sanskara is ignored, then sexuality is always covered with guilt, always covered with reaction, with karmic reaction, and always covered by some darkness, and covers the consciousness. Avritam jnane tena duspurena nalena cha kama rupena kunteya. It is said that this kama rupa, this form of lust, it covers our knowledge of the Absolute Truth. So when we are not following the Dharma Varuda Bhutisu Kamsmi Bharatasava principle of authorized sexual activity, then we become covered by sexual activity and the Absolute Truth will be hidden from us. Nama Prakasa Svarasa Yoga Maya Samabhita. So it's tricky business. Therefore, in the household of ashram, one should, just as in any other of ashram, must be very careful. Ksurasya dara. It is said it's like shaving. You know, one mistake and you cut. So dealing with the material energy is like that. You have to be attentive and very careful. When you shave carefully, no problem. But if you just a little, you want to do it too quick, or you know, everyday shaving. Okay. 1, 2, 3. Oops. Attentive. So in dealing with Maya, always attentive.
Maharaj, I don't have a question, but one small note. Yesterday you also had a lecture about this issue, and the point you made about the house Shiva gave to Parvati.
That he what?
Built the house.
Oh, the house.
The house.
Yeah.
The golden house.
Yeah.
And there was a yogya, he said, and I thought he said that the yogya was done by Ram. And actually he hated Ram. Ram was a Brahma. Mm-hmm. And he was just saying something like, it could be Brahma.
Yeah, I couldn't remember that. It could be. Okay, he gave one detail. Good. Because my memory was failing. I couldn't remember that part of the story. I have a terrible memory, and all these Puranic stories, they drive me crazy. Because
You know, there's like so many names, so many, this one did that, and that one, and sometimes there's a story within the story, and oh God, you know, I just like, it's too much for my mind.
No, it doesn't matter.
It matters, but it's just, I'm not giving an excuse or an apology. I don't feel bad about it. I'm not feel bad about it at all. I'm just telling, I'm okay. You don't have to make me feel comfortable. I'm all right. I just have a terrible memory, and I'm honest about it. And then it's the way it is. It's fine. Yeah.
Maharaj, thank you very much for this nice explanation about Pradhan and Mahatattva. I got a little confused when you said that this glance of Mahavishnu comes in the beginning of the day of Brahma, because we know that the universe is only partially destroyed at the beginning, at every day of Brahma. Can you please explain it a little further, because the three upper planetary systems are still there. So
I think you're right. I think I said it wrong. I think you've nicely put it straight. I think so. I think I'm corrected by your comment. So that's good.
Sorry, that was not my
intention. No. Again. You don't have to make me feel good about it. I'm not sitting here. I sit on a big seat, but I'm not a big person, and I have a terrible memory. So things slip through sometimes. So that was good. That was good.
That means the glance of Mahavishnu
happens at
the beginning of the life.
Yes.
Of course,
yes. Good.
No,
well done. Yes, Adi Sesh.
It's described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that there are different kinds of anartas. Some are coming from pious activities, some are coming from raising from sinful activities.
Some are coming from what?
From pious activities.
And the other ones?
Sinful activities.
Okay.
And then it's mentioned that there are anartas which are raising by offenses.
Yeah.
But it's not explained what these anattas are. Anattas from sinful activities, they are attachments to sense gratification, and these anattas from pious activities from last life, it's now the attachment to the heavenly planets, something like that.
Yeah.
It's also mentioned that we have anattas in us which are raised by committing offenses.
And then in Madhurya Kadambini he says something like that, Seva up, there's Nama Apparat and Seva Apparat, the 10 offenses in the matter of chanting the holy name, and the offenses that are performed in service, in the course of service, accidentally by maybe some inattentiveness or forgetfulness and so on. He says that Seva Apparat does not cause any anartas, but Seva Apparat just causes reactions in the course of service. He says that Nam Apparat is actually causing new anartas within the heart. And he says when Seva Apparat is consciously performed, that, like for example, one is supposed to bow down in the temple, and if you think, too much trouble, right, then it becomes Nam Apparat, and it becomes and it creates anartas. But if one is too busy and one just forgets, one forgets to bow down. Let's say you walk in a temple and someone talks to you straight away and you totally forget to bow down. Then it's a seva apparat. Yeah? And you might get reactions in the course of service for such neglect. So the nam apparat creates anartas. So then we can appreciate that. We can look at these 10 offenses and appreciate that the particular moods that these offenses convey, that they are constituting a mentality that is the result of those anartas. The tendency to criticize the Vaishnavas, the tendency to not put one's full faith in the holy name, but to have a tendency towards taking shelter of the demigods for some mundane worship, to take the spiritual master cheaply, to not have full faith in all the Vedic literatures, and to kind of see the scriptures maybe as theoretical and as not really having so much to do with practical life. For example, these could be examples of such anartas. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I said we can look in the Brihad Bhagavatam Rita, and in the Brihad Bhagavatam Rita, you can look in part 1, chapter 2, texts 94 to 98. Yeah. That deals with that. And then in the Paramatma Sandarbha, then I have to look in the iPad to get the number. I can do it for you. We can also do it after the class. And the Brahma Samhita, that's kind of easy to find. You just can find the description about the halo in the Brahma Samhita. It's a few verses into the Brahma Samhita. Don't know the exact text number. On the Paramatma Sandarbha first, and I'll give you after in the corridor. Anyone else? Not a technical one again.
About this Seva Prad you were mentioning.
Oh, Seva
Prad. When the disciple makes this Seva Prad, does it also affect the spiritual master?
When the disciple commits Seva Aparad, does it also affect the spiritual master? No, not necessarily, no. When a Seva Aparad, one is simply in the course of one's service, one makes mistakes and one gets some purification for it. One may get some suffering for purification, but it's not touching the heart really. Whether the spiritual master has to suffer for our sinful actions or not, it depends on his adhikar, it depends on his qualification, it depends on how much purity he has, how much credit he has with Krishna. Because ultimately Krishna is the controller of all the reactions, so Krishna decides how much the spiritual master has to suffer for the misbehavior of disciples. And if Krishna so desires, then he will just write it off. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, how could we ever dare to initiate anyone if we didn't have the protection of Krishna? I mean, you know, I wouldn't just be walking with a stick, I wouldn't be walking at all. Yeah? I might be dead in the grave by now. But Krishna's protecting. Yeah.
Yeah. One does 100% can be sure that the spiritual master is satisfied with the service without having a good connection.
When you don't have a good connection, it means that he's not satisfied with the service. Because the good connection is not about a good internet connection. The good connection is happening within the heart. And it means that you within the disciple within the heart has not made a good connection. The connection from the spiritual master's side is always good. He's an ever well-wisher. The spiritual master relates to a disciple according to the Chandogya Upanishad in three ways, either like the bird, like the fish, or like the tortoise. The bird way means that the birds, they feed their young, they're constantly flying up and down, pre-digesting it, popping it into his mouth, and the bird just sits there. Okay, so that's one relationship where the guru is running up and down and just feeding his inactive disciple. The fish way is where the guru has some supervision. The fish has some supervision over its young, but is not so actively involved. Otherwise the young fish has to figure it out himself. But when there's a real need, the fish will protect its young. The tortoise places its eggs in the sand, and the tortoise is leaving those eggs to germinate by the hot sun. The tortoise, however, is meditating on the well-being of those eggs. So in this way, sometimes the spiritual master is caring very intimately for the disciples. Sometimes he's just supervising from somewhat of a distance, and other times he's meditating. But he's always meditating on the well-being of his disciples. Therefore, from the side of the spiritual master, there is no lacking in the relationship. If there's anything lacking in the relationship, it's the problem of the disciples. Your heart to stop.
I'm talking sometimes to my working colleague who has a Christian background about being vegetarian and, you know, why to do it and so on and so forth. And he says sometimes, but what about when I drive with a car? I'm killing so many living entities. And I can understand, okay, when we say as Sankirtan band, who is, you know, like one is really engaged in Krishna's service. But what
you're a householder maintaining two kids and a wife, and you're driving your van to make money and to maintain a Krishna conscious household, right? Where the four regulative principles are followed, or where we try to follow, where we try to worship Krishna. So how is it not Krishna conscious? It's all Krishna conscious. So, in that way, yeah. But it's not. We live in this world of cars, so we have cars. But we hope one day that there will be a world where there will be no more cars. But even bullock carts they kill, right? And even the Jains they kill. Right? So it's unavoidable.
To make the best thing of the best bargain, so to say.
Yeah. Try and be pure. Try and be a pure grihastha. I try and be a pure sannyasi. They can try and others can try to be pure brahmacharis or pure vanaprasthas if they exist. If there are any. It's about purity. Okay, I'm done. Exhausted. Make sure last night.